Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Thanks so much.
Hello, Miss Student.
Hello, Dr. Rice. Glad you came. I hoped you would. I realize you've made certain assumptions about me. I can see the flash of an X-ray camera. It's blinding.
Why'd you come here?
Where I come from, there's a terrible drought. We saw pictures of your planet on television. We saw the water. In fact, our word for your planet means planet of water.
You watched it all on television? Where exactly did you come from?
Well, I'm not an astronomer, but somewhere down there.
Are you the first?
The first what? Visitor? I've always been visited. On my own planet, we found evidence of visitors. You must have seen them here.
No, I don't think so.
Well, I've seen them. I've seen their footsteps in their places.
I've seen those things. We've all seen them. That's for theorists. I'm a scientist.
Well, I'm not a scientist. But I know all things begin and end in eternity.
What are you going to do?
You mean, Dr. Bryce, what's in my mind?
Yeah. What's in your mind?
Don't worry. I don't want to hurt you.
Hello, and welcome to Book Versus Movie. This is a podcast where we read books that have been adapted into movies, and then we try to decide which we like better, the book or the movie. I am Margot P. of ColoniaBook.com, and this is my good friend and co-host, Margot D. of Brooklyn Fit Chick.
Hi, everyone.
So it's, where are we? It's April.
Yes.
April. It's been more than a year. For those of you who are new, first of all, welcome. Thank you for joining us. As you can guess, this is a podcast about movies that have been adapted from books. But since we've been in this lockdown era that we are in, we have been doing a brand new episode every single week, which means that we've kind of branched out in our literary sources. Today, we are going to be talking about an actual book. We are both named Margot. I, Margot P., am in San Diego, and Margot D. is in Brooklyn. Boy, we were just saying before we came on the air, we're going to have a lot to talk about with today's book and movie. But before we get to that, if you are new, there are a few places where you can interact with myself and Margot D. and other listeners of Book Versus Movie on the internet.
We have a basic Facebook page that you can like, and all the episodes are posted there, but we're more interactive in our Facebook group, and that's a private group. So you just ask to join Book vs. Movie Podcast Group, and then you go on in there, and literally we just talk about books and movies. It's a nice safe space in the Facebook world for people to interact with each other, but you could also follow us on social media at Twitter at Book vs. a Movie. Just spell that out. We have a Book vs. Movie Podcast on Instagram, and we have a basic email, a kind of an old-timey email, I guess you would say, Book vs. Movie Podcast at gmail.com. You just spell that all out, and if you have ideas, suggestions. We're always looking for ideas. We're always looking for suggestions. We just ask that the thing that we're adapting, be it a book or a song or a magazine article or whatever, it needs to be easily accessible and the movie needs to be streaming. So if we have to buy a DVD or even a VHS or anything like that, we can't do it because we don't have those things that we can use in our homes. So everything has to be streaming and everything has to be easily available. And also we have stickers, by the way. We have a new logo and we have stickers. Yay. So if you like some, please let me know and I will drop them in the mail for you just wherever you want to reach out to us.
That's right. I know. I love the stickers. I just got a new computer and I put my new book versus movie sticker right smack in the middle.
Yay.
Covering the logo of the computer. So today we're going to be talking about The Man Who Fell to Earth, which I kind of remember that I had to watch this movie in college.
Most people. Yeah.
There was a lot of stuff I forgot, though, about this movie. But let's talk first about the book, which came out in 1963.
Let me say first also that it's available on Audible. We do have an Audible promotion. Oh, yeah. So you go to audibletrial.com/book versus movie and you could check out their service for free for 1 month. I super like this book and I listened to it. I've been going back to walking because the weather is nice again and I super enjoyed it. So it is available there. And also, by the way, just really quickly, if you want to support the show, we do have a Patreon page and we put older episodes up there. I forget what I just put up there. But anyway, it's everything from like 2018 and before that. And there's like Jurassic Park is there. I believe Jaws is there.
Was it Moneyball?
It was Moneyball because it's baseball season. Exactly. That's up on our Patreon wall. So just go to P-A-T-R-E-O-N, Book VS Movie Podcast, if you want to help support the show. Anyway, Margot, we have Walter Tevis as our author today.
That's right. Man Who Fell to Earth. Now, I'm not usually a sci-fi person, but like you, I enjoyed this book very much.
I super loved this book. Well, let's talk about the author.
He's a good writer.
He is an excellent writer and fascinating human. You guys, you probably heard about him if you have Netflix and you swallowed up The Queen's Gambit like I did in just like a couple of days.
Oh, me too.
He is the author of that. He's also the author of The Hustler, which is a movie about pool sharks, but starring Paul Newman. The Color of Money is his work. I mean, too, he was born in San Francisco 1928 into a very, very wealthy family. They had a lot of money. But he was a very sickly kid, and he wound up being in a children's home many times, away from his family. And then his parents lost all their money, and they put him on a train, and they shipped him to Kentucky with family. And then he had to kind of come back from that. He was a teacher, and then he became, and quite often teachers become authors. You know, that's a way to get a job and keep writing at night. He was married. He had an affair. He married the second wife. He also, a thread in his work is he, and he says this in interviews, he was a raging alcoholic between into the 50s, well into the 70s, until he got into Alcoholics Anonymous. That was the only way he could quit. So a lot of his characters tend to have drinking problems. You could see that from The Queen's Gambit and in The Man Who Fell to Earth, who we're talking about today. Everybody drinks. There's a lot of themes about money that's in his work. There's themes about loneliness in his work. And I think that's all kind of just a part of his life. Sadly, he died at 56 to lung cancer. And his estate now runs his work. But that's our author today, Walter Tevis.
This is a great book. I don't think I've read this book before. I don't remember if I had or not. I kind of think I did not, but I certainly had seen the movie. I've seen it on TV a couple times, but of course there are huge hunks cut out of it anytime it's on TV. And I did see it in college, although there's, like I said, there were whole sections that I did not recall, but the book it's a quick read and it's a very interesting premise, as many sci-fi books are. It reminded me a lot of Bradbury, of a kind of Ray Bradbury style.
Oh yeah,
story. So you have a man who comes from outer space and lands on Earth. There's a lot of, if you've seen the movie, a lot of the basic, most of the basic plot points are the same. Although I believe in the book, same thing, that he sells the ring to get money, and then he meets the lawyer, Farnsworth, the patent lawyer, and he shows him these patents, and then he becomes a squillionaire, and it's all to fund this project to build a spaceship. I believe, though, in the book that his plan is to build the spaceship back to, so he can travel back to his home planet and then bring people back to Earth with him.
Yes.
Right? And the idea in the book is that his planet which we're to assume is in our solar system. It's one of our planets that we know, but he calls it by a different name. He calls it Anthea. They have run out of water. And although they're a very, very advanced civilization with lots of technology and peace and all of that, they have no water. And so the vehicle that he takes to come to Earth, which is mostly water, is like this very, like a little single person vehicle. It's not enough to transport water or people. So while in the movie, it's about transporting water, in the book, it's about transporting people from his home planet back to Earth. But first he has to build a ship to get him back home, like a bus, like a space bus.
Yeah. I have to say he reminded me of Philip K. Dick. And I felt the same way.
True. Yes.
When I read this, like I did when we were reading Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
Yeah, I like that too. You're right.
Because I like sci-fi movies. I don't really like to read sci-fi so much, but I think some of the best writing, it doesn't matter where it takes place. It's just a good mm-hmm. story. He's a beautiful writer. There's a whole scene where there's a professor who's a drunk and he's an alcoholic and he sleeps around with his students. Newton hires him to be a part of his project. It's very specific. Like he earns $300 million within a few years of being on Earth, which 1963, that's a lot of money. 1976, that's a lot of money. He needs that money to build the spaceship, like we said. And Nathan Bryce is the person that used to be a teacher. Now he works for him and says to him, well, if we bring your people here, how do we know you're not going to turn into a Hitler and put us under your control? And he sort of like, well, you got to just trust me. You know,
well, you don't.
Exactly. You don't. he shrugs his shoulders. Everybody in the movie, like I said, in the book, drinks. There's a lot of alcohol.
Oh, there's a lot of drinking. Yeah.
There's a load of drinking and he doesn't fall in love. He has a companion named Mary Lou. She falls in love with him. He's sort of meza on her.
I think in the book, it's a different name.
Yeah. I want to say that. Yeah. It's like yeah. Cindy Lou.
Something like
or...
that. It's a name like that.
Yeah. I'll try to look it up, but yeah, Betty Jo, excuse me. So Betty Jo falls in love with him and she's sort of this common girl and he lands in Kentucky, which is a difference between the book and the movie, but he becomes a mogul and what he does is that it's sort of like Polaroid pictures, but they're in a roll of film. He has a few patents and he needs a patent lawyer and all he wants to do is like have all this money and then he just wants to go back to his planet. In order to amuse himself, he watches a lot of television and this is a big theme in the 70s, which is that television's going to rot your brain and is terrible and it's a drug and there's a lot of stuff that becomes part of the culture. Like it's happening in this movie. I don't know if it was first or not in this story, but this is part of that. Like, oh, these boring Sunday morning shows that are art shows and things like that. He watches things all the time. Eventually, the government kind of catches on to him. And the FBI arrests him. And we do spoil, by the way, if this is your first time listening. They do an examination and they're X-raying his eyes and they blind him.
Yeah. In the book, I know it's so sad. So in the book, you get the government kind of, just as he's going to get going and his project is kind of coming to fruition, in spite of his growing addiction to alcohol, I can't remember if it's the FBI first or the CIA, it was one or the other, mm-hmm. swoops in and you find out that they've always known that he was there. They've been watching him the entire time that he's been on Earth. They lock him up in this place and do all kinds of experiments on him for like years, we're to think, years and years. And then once they get finished with him, then the other agency comes in and the two agencies have not been talking to each other. So while the first agency has run all these tests and knows all this information about him and his physiology is like and everything, they share none of that with the second. So the second one comes in all afresh to run all these experiments and they take an X-ray of his eyes, which in the book, he wears contacts as he does in the movie to appear human. But in the book, the X-rays cause the contacts to meld to his eyes and he becomes blind. So now he can never go home. He's too blind. Even though he's rich, he can't go now. Like it's all, he's gone through all this suffering, all this work, and it's just completely futile, and his family, you know, and he talks the whole time that he has a wife and children back on his home planet. And you know that they're just like, the more time that goes on, you're like, oh, he's got to get back. There's no water. But then when he's blind, you know, it's just all goes poof. It's very sad. And so then at the end, he's a blind, he's still super rich. And Bryce, who's the professor that goes to work for him, that was sleeping with his students, is old. Everybody ages, but he does not age. So he's blind and he's a drunk now, but he's not aged at all. And in the book, it goes into more detail. He releases a record in his own language, which he hopes will get played on the radio so that maybe it could possibly reach his home planet and his family. And it's just a message of utter despair. It's terribly sad. It's not like, I love you and I miss you. It's like, you know, this was all pointless. Screw you all. You know, sorry.
Sorry, I did my best, but the best is not good enough.
Yeah. So, but it's very well written. It's very compelling. Oddly, I found myself feeling a lot of empathy for all of the main characters, not the government.
No, but our main leads. I mean, they're human. I mean, they have their foibles. They're not perfect people, but they're all trying to figure out their way in the world. And it's a bleak story. I don't know how to explain it. It's just beautifully written. I love the setting of it. I love the dialogue. It was an interesting story, great dialogue. And the ending is probably the way it would be, that I mean, that's just what it is. So I super, super enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I don't know what to say. I thought it was really cool. If you've seen the movie, you should try to read the book. It's not long.
Unlike the movie.
get to that.
No, it's not long. It's super, good characters, a very compelling story. I got sucked in right away. And again, I'm not a big sci-fi person, but I really liked it. I thought it posed a lot of very compelling questions, I felt. Enjoyed it very much. And I should say also the book was written in 1963, but the story takes place in the mid to late 1980s and ends in 1990. And given that it was supposed to be the late 1980s and early 1990s being written in the early 60s, there wasn't a lot of, what do they call those? You know, there weren't a lot of things that they got wrong.
I know what you're trying to say. Let me think for a second. This was like Peggy Sue Got Married, when she says to the guy, I can't stay in this time anymore because I'm a walking.
Right.
Yeah. What's that word? I'll think of it later. Yes. Yeah.
I thought, you know, because we still had CRT TVs in the 1980s, you know, so it's still very prescient. I thought the predictions that it made about the future were very smart. He was very smart about the way that he did that. He didn't do too much.
Well, he kept it human. He was like, what would people do if they had, you know, because sometimes when people write about the future, they either everyone's a total creep or everyone's so good. And he's sort of, it's more of a mishmash. People are kind of all over the place.
Anyway.
An anachronism.
I'm not sure.
Someone that's not in their correct historical time.
Oh, great.
Okay. Sorry, guys. That was going to make me crazy if I didn't figure that
me
out.
Me too. Thank you. So then it's adapted in the 1970s by Nicholas Rogue, who did The Witches, which I love. The Witches, I love that movie. And the other movie I really also really like from him is Don't Look Now.
We get a lot of requests for that one.
So scary.
Yeah,
I really love that movie though. I think it's so great. I think I love, like, you're just the Venice backdrop and the whole thing. So this is the follow up. This was his follow up work after Don't Look Now. He decided to do The Man Who Fell to Earth.
Are you the first?
The first one. Visitor? I've always been visited.
Nothing you have seen or heard about David Bowie will prepare you for the impact of his first dramatic performance in The Man Who Fell to Earth. This is another dimension of David Bowie, one of the few true originals of our time.
You're really a freak. I don't mean that unkindly. I like freaks.
Is this a weapon?
A weapon?
It was too small for interplanetary travel.
So you assume that it's a weapon? If I stay here, I shall die.
What do you mean? Take me with you. I'll see you don't die.
I can't stay.
You're an alien!
I think you know... You know too much about me. Where are you taking me?
He's just like everybody else. He's a fake.
Please don't do it. You don't understand.
You might be able to save him.
Mary Lou!
Save him?
Help me!
From what?
Fell to Earth is a powerful love story, a cosmic mystery, a spectacular fantasy, a shocking, mind-stretching experience in sight, in space, and sex.
And our star is David Bowie, and I'm reading a book right now, and it's called David Bowie, The Oral History by Dylan Jones. Mm. So David Bowie in 1975, when they filmed this movie, it's hard to imagine this, but he was famous, but he still was sort of into, like, the rock geeks liked him, and the freaky kids liked him, but he didn't have any huge pop hits. And so
certainly not in the U.S.
Not in the U.S. Much. Yeah. And yeah. But it was underground.
Yeah.
He was underground, and he had made a film called Cracked Actor, and it's all about him on tour. And Bowie, throughout the 60s, sort of invented himself. He was a huge fan of the Beatles and Pink Floyd, and he wanted to do his own thing. And did he ever? I mean, there's nobody like him. So this is a few, like, 2 or 3 years after Ziggy Stardust, which he said was a character that he played for years that almost killed him, because he ate nothing. He did cocaine all the time. He drank all the time. He played a space oddity. There's so much going on with Bowie. But it's so funny to read, because John Lennon did a song with him called Fame. And In this story, they're talking about it, like, they all freaked out because Lennon was a god to them. And Bowie was so nervous, and nobody knew who he really was. He was, like, on the fringes. I don't even know, like, who I would say nowadays, like, would be like him. But he does this film with Nicholas Roeg, and he's the perfect person. Like, who else would you get to play this character in 1975, 76? He is kind of perfect.
We should say, too, that in the book, we didn't mention this.
Yeah.
There's a tremendous detail is given to the description.
Yes.
Of Tom. He is the description in the book. I mean, he's describing David Bowie in the 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds exactly like David Bowie looked in those days. It's amazing.
But he was tall. He was supposed to be, like, almost 7 feet tall.
True. He was extraordinary in the book. He's extraordinarily, outlandishly tall. But very, very thin, very pale, eyes are weird, you know, just the whole deal. So, yeah, he's perfect. He's absolutely perfect. And there are a few, I don't know where to start with this movie.
Well,
let's talk about the cast. So we've got David Bowie as the lead.
Yeah, Thomas Jerome Newton. We have Rip Torn, 1970. I didn't recognize him at first.
I didn't either.
Because I remember with what was the Gary Shandling show that he did with him? Yeah, Larry Sanders. He was so brilliant. Candy Clark plays Mary Lou, his love interest. Buck Henry is Oliver Farnsworth, his lawyer, his patent lawyer. Bernie Casey plays Peters, who was supposed to get, they filmed bigger scenes with him, but supposedly he was playing a rival businessman, and people in the audience says, oh, we can't believe a black man would be that successful over white people. It's like, what? There's Professor Canuti, played by Jackson Kane. The Arthur is Tony Maschia. Those are like the main people.
Right. I know. It makes me so angry about that because, first of all, it's supposed to be the future. We can't envision a future where perhaps there's a black mega millionaire who is a captain of industry and would, come on, people. What's the woman who plays Mary Lou?
Candy Clark.
Candy Clark. Candy Clark was Rogue's girlfriend.
Yep.
So she was like one of the first people who was cast. I think she's terrific in this.
I think
I like her performance a lot.
Her performance is fantastic. Her dialogue is not. She works with some pretty cheesy dialogue sometimes, but she's always believable. She's the most human of everybody in every way. And I like her a lot. I love, did you know, the screenplay, by the way, is Paul Mayersberg. So they based it on this story, but they took some liberties. And, I forgot to say also, in I don't know if you noticed in the credits, but it says Suits by Ola Hudson. That's Slash's mother.
Yeah.
From Guns N' Roses. I was like, oh my God, that's so cool.
They're really good in this.
Oh, they are. And David Bowie is so painfully thin that they said he had to wear boys' clothes, that they couldn't get anything. He was like 100 pounds. He's like 5'10". And just...
He's so thin.
And everybody says, oh, he didn't do any drugs or anything. And then I'm reading this book. He's like, no, I was on coke every day. I mean, yeah, that's how you get like that. Where do we start with this story? I mean...
Okay, so the first thing is, rather than landing in Kentucky, as he does in the book, he is landing in New Mexico, which I understand because there's a lot of extraterrestrial associated with New Mexico. And I think the kind of ghost town desert landscape lends a lot visually. I think it's kind of interesting. And I kind of think this makes a little more sense, too, that he's, instead of building a ship to go back and bring the aliens to Earth, he's trying to find a way to get the water to his home planet, which to me made a little more sense. Fewer trips. So there's that as well. A lot of the beginning is the same. So he goes first thing, he sells the ring. He's got these rings that he's selling. That's out of the book. And that's how he gets his kind of first money. And then he gets to New York and hires this patent lawyer, Farnsworth. He knows about Earth because he's been watching it and studying it on TV, which he can get on his home planet. I love Buck Henry.
Yeah, he's a comedic actor, but he played some drama parts. He is
The Graduate.
That's right.
He wrote the screenplay of The Graduate.
We covered that one. We hated that book, but we loved the movie.
The book was awful, but the screenplay is good. Yeah.
Yeah. And in the movie, he has a homosexual relationship. He has a roommate boyfriend. And so David Bowie hires him to be the front man for his company. And he wears these odd glasses. There's a lot of eye stuff that goes on because of David Bowie's eyes. And that's what really not that Bowie was like that. That's really what.
Those are his own eyes. He was in a fight, I think, as a young man. And that's how his one eye got like that.
Right. And Candy Clark, we should say she was in American Graffiti before this. Like that's one of her huge. Big parts. She was dating Nicholas Rogue, so she had months and months and months of preparation. Bowie, they were trying to get other people. So it's hard to think, like, why would you cast anybody but him? But they did.
Seriously.
And then Rip Torn plays the professor. You first texted me, you saw the movie again before me, and you're like, oh my God. It was like the music is John Phillips.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Not Bowie, which is
not
what?
Not Bowie. Why on earth would you get John Phillips when you could have David Bowie? Why? I don't know what the story is about that, but if there's one thing, there's things I like and things I don't like about this movie. Spoiler alert. One of the things I really, 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 really don't like is the soundtrack. It is garbage. I really don't like it. It's lazy. It's dipped snippets of existing, Americana. It's supposed to, it's so pretentious. I just really dislike it.
Well, come on, you children, give a listen to me. Let me tell you about a new boogaloo. There's no hesitation, and it's sweeping the nation. It's the rumble boogie down the South American way. While Madame Mazongo was teaching the conga in her little cabana down in old Havana, we were doing the Charleston and balling the jazz. And then that old black bottom started the jitterbug rag. Well, just step out together.
Every time that it's interruptive, it's too loud. It's distracting.
We should say something.
I don't like it.
First, once again, this is okay. So Bowie, after he does this movie, he records Young Americans, and that album makes him a superstar. Like, he goes on Soul Train and stuff. Like, his whole career. So maybe they didn't think maybe they thought his time was over because he was really popular in the early 70s. I don't know. But also, editing this movie, people that backed it didn't like it very much. So then Nicholas Roeg spent 10 months editing, which is a ridiculous amount of time, it looks like it. It looks like they tried to splice it together.
Labored.
And so sometimes these music transitions are kind of like, whoop, okay, now we're going to be in a good, or we're just going to be, this is going to be really loud poppy music, but something depressing is happening. Or this is going to be, they're just in a car. It doesn't make any sense.
It's really dislike the soundtrack.
Right. And then the other thing, and we'll say good stuff too. I'll say this. You should see this movie if you've never seen it.
Absolutely, you must.
You must.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's a sci-fi classic. The performances are really good.
I agree. I think the performances are all very good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody's performance, even the smallest roles, like I love the woman in the pawn shop.
Yes.
In that very first scene. Oh, she's fabulous. And the boyfriend, you know, Buck Henry's boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And I mean, all of these, every single actor, I think, is really doing really great work in this movie. But yeah, my main peeve is, number one, that music is
dreadful.
Just so bad. And number two, it's about 40 minutes too long.
It's too damn long, and also too many repetitive scenes.
Indeed.
So many sex scenes, and it's like, we should tell you, it's full frontal. It's
70s
bodies. And there's one sex scene where you're sort of like, it's a wink and a nod, like he's going to have sex with that girl on the campus. And they're playing this kind of Peter Frampton music, but it's not. And then it goes right into this scene. And then she's literally saying, yeah, at the top of her lungs. And he's saying, yeah, at the top of his lungs. And then there's Foley work.
Yeah.
The crash and bangs don't make sense because they're on a couch or something.
No.
And it's.
No. Make no sense.
No freaking sense. It just made my brain hurt. And it's one girl after the other, after the other, everyone's naked. And there's three scenes where two or three scenes where Bowie's like inspecting Candy's Clark's body and she's inspecting his body. I'm like, we get it.
Oh, I know.
He's an alien. He's getting used to his skin. I'm like, he's been in it for years now. Like, this can't be. It just, but okay. So I said that. I still really like this movie. I think everyone should see it. Yeah.
Oh, too. Absolutely. I think the sets are really great.
Mm-hmm.
I love the costumes and the performances, you know, are very, very good. And again, the premise is a good, solid premise. You know, you've got this alien who's really trying to, you know, he's his civilization's last hope. He gets sucked into the undertow of the banality of American culture. And I think that's a very interesting premise. And I like the way that all the characters interact with each other. Yeah. And the passage of time, even though the movie is just way too long, it's still definitely worth a watch. There's a lot of really good things about this movie, for sure.
Yeah, it's the same premise. He lands on Earth and there's this, is it Icarus rising from the ashes or rising from the water? Like, Icarus plays a role in this, but he lands in the water and then he kind of walks around and he sells his ring and he gets money. And then he has these patent ideas and he looks up the Buck Henry character, Oliver Farnsworth. He becomes instantly rich. And one of the, I liked the cool thing where they had like the Polaroid film roll that she, I thought that there's little touches like, oh yeah, that would be cool. People would love that. That would make sense. Mm-hmm. That's neat. I super liked Rip Torn and David Bowie together.
I did too.
I liked their scene. Really nice
chemistry. I know. I liked it too.
You know,
I thought they were really cool together.
Yeah. I think they were really good. Bernie Casey is good with what he's given. Okay, so then it's another odd choice at the end when the FBI and or CIA, I don't know, they wear helmets for some reason.
Yeah, what is that about?
I don't know. Because it looked like Gazoo on the Flintstones, like that kind of. Maybe that was the inspiration.
And if they're going to kill him, who cares if he sees what they look like?
It made no sense. And they're leaving their fingerprints everywhere. I don't know, but they throw him against the window and then it just cracked. He didn't go through it. Like, that was supposedly an error, but that's when you do get the falling symbolism again of Buck Henry falling. So like I said, spoilers, they get killed and Bowie is at one point, he has an affair with Mary Lou. He already has a wife and kids back home and that's all there. Candy Clark also plays his wife, but in heavy makeup. The makeup is really good too, I think.
I think so too.
It looks real.
I was going to say, because everybody is aging, there's a lot of there's a lot of passage of time in this movie. As in the book, everybody's aging, but Newton, the alien, is not. And so Rip Torn and what is her name?
Candy Clark.
Candy Clark. I keep wanting to say Candy Cane. Candy Clark. You know, get older and older and older, and I think they did that pretty well for the 70s.
Yeah, they do. So they didn't have David Bowie's music. So we have this music by John Phillips. Phillips admits it's not great. Over the years, he has his own kind of creepiness, but also sprinkled throughout the soundtrack are songs that are mentioned in the story. I believe Blueberry Hill is mentioned in the book as well.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a few times where they do, and those kind of like, I think it's a Louis Armstrong doing that Blueberry Hill. Like that works. I mean, there's a lot about radio and electronic equipment and radio waves and things like that. Those are like big things. That's how he communicates with his home planet. Oh, this is what I wanted to say. So when Mary Lou realizes he's an alien, it takes her a long time to figure that out.
Oh, yes.
Like she freaks out. He has eyes that look like lizard eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently Candy Clark said she wanted to vomit from being so shocked, but she couldn't do it. So he had her pee on herself. There's some of the decisions with her character and with it was starting to get on my nerves because it's a little one note. I mean, it's just sort of like she just, there's a scene where Buck Henry is giving her money and She's like, no, no, I want Tommy. I want Tommy. Like, why do you want Tommy? He's a pain. He's like, he doesn't go out.
He doesn't care about you.
He doesn't love you.
So beautiful to my eyes. do they know?
Know what?
About you.
How did you get in here?
Through the front doors.
The double door?
Where are you going?
Take the check and run. Start a new life. You know, you're young. You're pretty. Get out there. But so there's sometimes the dialogue is very ham-handed and her character is not handled very well. I don't think. I think she's good in it.
Right. No, I agree. Her dialogue is not. It's out of everybody. She has the worst writing.
Yeah.
And she's doing
heavy lifting
with it. Oh, yes. Yeah. Her writing is not good. Yeah, a lot of the dialogue is not good, but again, the performances are super good.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely worth watching. Yeah, she pees on herself.
I know. I mean,
it's so weird. She screams and screams and screams and screams for like 8 minutes, screaming and screaming and screaming, and running and screaming, and then she's peeing on herself, and we have to be like super close up, so we're not, no mistake whatsoever about that's what's going on. Yeah,
it's a little, and once again, the movie's just too long. There was a version that was released that did take off 30 minutes or so, but people said it was incomprehensible,
mm-hmm.
and it's not very comprehensible now, but okay. And that added to it. But then years later, when we have VHS, when we have DVDs, when we have Criterion collections, and that the movie does come out and it's now considered a classic. Once again, it is a classic. We're not saying that it's not.
There's some really cool stuff in this movie, sure.
Yeah, it's almost 50 years old. So it's okay to point out some things that don't seem, mm-hmm. you know,
and I would say to its credit, just like with the book, you know, it's taking place in the future, and yet it doesn't feel horribly dated. It's mm-hmm. it's cool looking.
Yeah. And Bowie's great. Honestly, though, if you are a big fan of it, and I'm a huge Bowie fan, by the way, and I like sci-fi movies. It should be right in my wheelhouse, and I love the 70s, so I'm like, it just should be right there. And there's just certain times I thought, like, this is dragging. I'm checking my phone, and I shouldn't be doing that, and I'm noticing the Foley. I'm noticing the bad music. It's so it's not a perfect classic, but they're not all of the classics are perfect. And but if you do seriously like the story, please, you should really check out the book. If you're and mm-hmm. I think of the two of them, I actually like the book better.
I have to agree. I do think the book is better. First of all, it's just neater.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not, it doesn't have all this extra fluff of I don't know what all we were doing there for a bit. I think the all the coolest things about the movie, if you do love this movie, are definitely in the book.
Mm-hmm.
You can see why the book would inspire Nicholas Roeg to make this movie. And it's just good writing. It's good, mm-hmm. solid writing. Yep. I have to give it to the book as well. And I guess it's mainly because of the writing. It's definitely not the performances at all. And I didn't, you know, and I don't object to the plot points that they, you know, the plot points that they changed or added. I think we're fine. I just didn't like the dialogue and those long, extended, repetitive sequences of mm-hmm. his family's back on their home planet, and it's dry and they're they're dying, and we go back 40 minutes later and it's still dry and they're still dying. And
it's kids dying. I don't want to see that.
Yeah, I know. It's very drawn out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for that reason, I would give an edge to the book, but it is very good. Very fun watch. I could see why people love it. There's a lot of really cool stuff, cool things around this movie that I wish if only it had a Bowie soundtrack.
I think that would make a huge difference. I think that would make a really big difference because music is important. And if it had his sound in there, that just would have added to. I guess they didn't realize how famous he was going to be. Who could know? But like I said, yeah, Young Americans comes out like a year later, and then he's the biggest thing ever.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
yeah. I really enjoyed reading it, and I enjoyed watching the movie, even though it was too long. It was very fun.
Yeah, no, it's a good discussion.
So, what are we doing next?
I'm looking at our list. I'm going to go back to a few. I was thinking, what about Father of the Bride?
Oh.
It's 240 pages.
Okay.
That's super quick.
Okay. Are we going to do Elizabeth Taylor or Steve Martin?
It's up to you. I haven't seen the Elizabeth Taylor one.
Let's do that one then.
Okay.
Have we done Elizabeth Taylor?
I don't think we have. This is going to be our first Liz Taylor.
Yeah. Cool.
Who plays her father? Spencer Tracy?
Spencer Tracy.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Oh, I forgot to mention, Showtime is supposedly going to film The Man Who Fell to Earth as a series. And it's with Chiwetel Ejiofor. Is that how you say his name? He's going to be the lead. So I think that's going to be interesting.
Cool. See, now reading this book, I think it totally warrants a series.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, that sounds like that's going to be great.
Yes. So we'll keep an eye on that. The next book and movie is going to be The Father of the Bride. And I believe I wrote everything down, so it should be pretty easily available to everyone. Please follow us on all the things. If you leave us a review on iTunes, we'll mention you. I want to say hello to Steve, Premier Power Monsieur Man, who left us a really nice 5-star review in iTunes. We totally appreciate that. That helps us find our people. Follow us on Patreon if you want to help support the show. We have some really affordable options there. Just send us a note on all the socials, or once again, send an email, bookversusmoviepodcast@gmail.com, especially if you would like some stickers. We're happy to send them out to you. And Margo, where can they find you?
You can find me online at coloniabook.com, and all of my social media callouts are at She's Nacho Mama. And where can they find you?
You can find me on social media at Brooklyn Fitchick, and my blog is brooklynfitchick.com. And we'll be back soon with a new episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Book Versus Movie podcast. We're a part of the Electronic Media Collective, and we follow the hashtags Podern Family and Lady Pod Squad. You can find us on social media at Book Versus a Movie. You just spell it all out for Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can send us an email at bookversusmoviepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to join our Facebook group, look for us under Book VS Movie Podcast Group in Facebook. Ask to join, and you may be lucky enough to get in. We also have a Patreon page if you want to support the show. Go to patreon.com and look for Book VS Movie Podcast. We record the show with our handy H6N, donated by those of you who are nice enough to contribute to the Patreon page. Thanks so much, and we'll be back soon with a new episode.
The willows play, love sweet melody, and all of the vows we made were never to be. Though we were parted, you followed me still.